In a book entitled Life Beyond Me, Thomas D'Exalta reminds us that technology has brought many wonders. Many of them are good, but it has also brought what he called the me world. A world that resolves around me. A world that revolves around us. For instance, there's something about an inbox that subtly, or maybe not so subtly, conveys the notion that we are important. 3 missed calls on a cell phone. A page of unread emails. Messages on our answering machine, all screaming at us, somebody needs me. And that is a true statement. Somebody does need you. Somebody does need me. But it's not because it's a me world. It's because it's a one another world. And that brings us to our topic, clean sheets. I had to smile a little bit when I got that topic. I did understand it. And I'll read what I was given. We have titled your topic Clean Sheets because a sign of good hospitality is clean sheets on the bed. And when people travel to a new place, they wonder if the sheets will be clean. I have stayed in many of your homes. To my knowledge, I've never had dirty sheets. But I would not be the one who would notice that. A couple of times I have stayed in a home and the lady forgot to put on any sheets. I stayed in a couple where they forgot to put on pillowcases, none of which even fazed me at all. And I've been the recipient of so much of your hospitality. But that's our subject, hospitality. A special invitation or a surprise knock on the door. Company arrives, and then our house is no longer the same. If they brought kids with them, there's clutter. If we fed them, there's dirty dishes. Always there's altered schedules, personal expense, inconvenience. From sharing a meal to sharing a bed, hospitality costs. It costs time. It costs energy. It costs money. But how we treat others affects our true core values. It shows what's really important to us. Do we see people as a treasure or as an inconvenience? Which is more important, people or the carpet? Hospitality becomes a demonstration of what is really in our hearts. I'm going to read 3 passages for you on this subject and then make some comments. Romans chapter 12, verses 10 and 13. Be kindly affectionate one to another with brotherly love, in honor, preferring one another, distributing to the necessity of the saints, given to hospitality. 1 Peter chapter 4, verses 8 through 10. And above all things, have fervent love among yourselves, for love shall cover a multitude of sins. Use hospitality one to another without grudging. As every man hath received the gift, even so minister the same to one another as good stewards of the manifold grace of God. And finally, Hebrews chapter 13, verse 2. Be not forgetful to entertain strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unaware. The door to your heart, the door to my heart, and the door to our house may in fact be the same. At least they certainly may swing on the same hinges. Long before the church had songbooks, pews, baptistries, or pulpits, the church had kitchens, dinner tables, and beds. Because the early church shared their homes one with another. They met in their homes. Acts chapter 2, verse 46. The home was a vital tool of the church. Paul, writing to Philemon, talks about the church in your house. Writing in Romans 16, he talks about the church that was in Priscilla and Aquila's house. Writing to the brethren at Colossae, he talks about the church that was in Nymphas' house. All had homes that the church met in. We don't normally do that today, and I don't know that that's wrong. Obviously, if I thought it was wrong, I wouldn't be here. But we do lose something when we trade the intimacy of a house for the comfort of an assembly. God had a wonderful plan. The early church was diverse. It was diverse culturally, nationally, economically. There were slaves and masters, Jews and Gentiles, Greeks and Romans. 15 nationalities heard Peter's sermon in Acts chapter 2. How do you bind such diversity together? How do you equalize such disparity? How do you build unity with that much diversity? They had the simplicity of the gospel, and they had the power of the home and the hospitality that comes with it. Does your home have a front door? Does it have a table and a chair? Can you fix a sandwich? Congratulations, you have just qualified to join one of the most ancient and important ministries of the Lord, hospitality. You can join the ranks of Mary and Martha, the widow of Zarephath, Abraham, the man whose house was used for the Passover in Matthew 26. Something special can and does happen in the hospitality of the home. I have the privilege of knowing not all of you, but most of you. And my most binding ties, my most intimate relationships are relationships that have been formed largely in your homes because of your hospitality. Around a table, sitting in a living room where all can speak and share. Hospitality and hospital both deal with healing. They're very similar words, aren't they? We have drugs to cure diseases like meningitis, gangrene, leprosy. But these drugs do not treat the main problem that many people have, the disease of not feeling included. Hospitality is the drug that can cure that. The rich and poor suffer more from rejection than from material want. Loneliness and the feeling of being unwanted is the most terrible poverty we can experience. In the New Testament, there are several words that imply hospitality. There's the Zeno, Z-E-N-O, family of words that carries the meaning, for instance, in Acts 28, 23, and Philemon 22, to receive a guest, to lodge. Xenodokia means to lodge or receive strangers. There's the family of words that come from philo. Philoxenia means love of strangers. to exhibit hospitality. And finally, there are two other Greek words that I'll mention. Hupolabonia, which means to receive or welcome or entertain. We find that in 3 John 8. And zungo, which means to take in or receive. We find that in Matthew 25, 35, 38, and 43. But what are the attitudes? What are the concepts that these words are trying to reveal to us? First of all, I think they reveal to us an attitude of hospitality. Because a hospitable person is a lover of good, courteous, welcoming, and generosity. But then there is the action of hospitality. The person that will feed and give us rest and lodging. And then there is the audience of hospitality. Someone who cares about what we think. And that goes a little bit along with Jay's comments of sharing our stories. Hospitality is one of the recognized traits of a leader in 1 Timothy 3. But it's expected of believers, and it demonstrates maturity in the faith, and it brings glory to God. Hospitality, however, does not come as easily for us as one might expect. I don't believe hospitality for most people comes naturally. I've met some that I think it comes naturally for, but I find them in the minority. Hospitality in the biblical sense comes not from the natural, but from the supernatural. It's not because hospitality is always dangerous, but maybe because our culture holds privacy so dear. We make fences around our yards, be they wooden or metal, to protect us from our neighbors. We have security systems and big ugly dogs that say, stay out. Hospitality will not happen naturally in our culture and in our mindset in which we were raised. But the kind of hospitality we find in Scripture is not natural. It's rather supernatural. It's a further way in which submission and servanthood are expressed. In 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 8 that I read for you, it says to do it without grumbling, without complaining. Every time I read that verse, I remember of a conversation dear brother Richard Riggins had with me one time. He had stayed in many, many homes. And he was staying in a home, and he often spent much of his time in his room. He would be reading or studying, and if you've ever kept Richard in your home, it was quite a privilege. But he came out one time into the hallway, and the lady of the house was on the phone, and he overheard her say, and I'll have to paraphrase it, "I can't wait for this week to be over." Richard said, "I stayed, but I didn't feel comfortable." Christians realize they are owners of nothing, and yet we are stewards of everything. The open door policy was needed not only for travelers and visiting Christians in the first century, but local believers who had lost their homes, jobs. This command shows that the corporate body or the church nature of the Christian faith. One part of the body caring for another. Like hands rubbing cold feet, or cold hands being placed in a warm part of the body. But biblical hospitality often requires a change in our attitude and a change in our approach. Many times a guest will come and go hardly noticed, and then we wonder why we never see them again. You ever, as you're traveling, visited other congregations where you weren't known? If you've done that very often, you can probably put those congregations into two categories. One that made you really feel welcome, and one that probably you wonder if they even knew you were there. Our guest should never be seen as anything but a wonderful gift from God. I believe there is a distinction, without getting semantical, between entertaining and hospitality. And the distinction, at least I make in my mind, and entertaining is not wrong, but entertaining people is often showing off our homes and our cooking abilities. Hospitality, rather, is opening our homes to them and welcoming them into our household. Entertaining really centers upon ourselves and look at us. Hospitality centers on our guests and look at you. Some people are taught hospitality by their parents. Some of you were raised in very hospitable homes. Some catch it from other people. Some just see it and are drawn to it. And I can think of a few people that are just so naturally hospitable that it puts me to shame. Others of us have to pray for it because it doesn't come as naturally. Oh, but you don't know my house. It's too small. It's too dirty. Well, you can't do anything about its size, but you can do something about the dirt if that bothers you. It won't bother me. Hospitality seeks to minister. It says that our homes are a gift from the Lord to be shared, not a Bastille to hide in. Sometimes we look at our homes as an expression of our personality, and I guess that's natural. You decorate it or paint it whatever colors you want, and that's somewhat a display of your personality. But hospitality is not a me function, it's a you function. What are some of the hindrances to hospitality, if we have them? And I'm going to assume that some of us do. Well, I think one of them is hospitality takes work. It takes work. It does put you out. It can ruin your plans if it's an unexpected thing. In Romans chapter 12, verse 13, it says we're to be given to it. Not drug into it, we're to be given into it, pursue it. John Piper wrote, and I thought it was an interesting thing that he said, and I quote, "The physical force of gravity pulls everything to the center of the earth. In order to break free from earth, thousands and thousands of pounds of energy and thrust have to push the space shuttle away from the center. There is also a psychological force of gravity that constantly pulls our thoughts and affections and physical actions inward toward the center of our homes and ourselves. Therefore, the most natural thing in the world is to neglect hospitality. It is the path of least resistance and of greatest comfort. All we have to do is yield to the natural gravity of a self-centered life that leaves no room for hospitality. We will forget life that leaves no room for hospitality. We will forget about it. We will neglect it. And God says, stop that. Blast out of your self-centered routine and become hospitable." My house is such a mess, and I just don't have time to keep it clean. You know, maybe we could just make a list of all the reasons not to be hospitable, and then go back and look at that list and put a P by every one of them that focuses on pride. "I'm just too busy. My neighbors always seem ready to lend a hand, but I find that if I see them working on something, I often just don't have time to lend a hand." Well, you may have to schedule hospitality a little bit before we get the hang of it. Some of us probably see our homes as a sanctuary. "My house is the place where I get away from people, not where I have them in." And I'm going to confess to you, that's one I have to fight. Because when I go home, it's kind of nice to be in a sanctuary for a while. You know, I wonder what effect air conditioning's had on hospitality. I'm glad we got it. It's nice for you to be able to stand up without hearing your shirt and blouse rip off the pew. I remember those days. But I also remember the days when people would sit out on their front porch and as their neighbor walked by, they would visit with them. The manicured lawn has really replaced the moat in terms of keeping people out. We need to also be thankful and courteous guests when people extend hospitality to us. When someone extends hospitality, how do you respond? With a thank you? Well, I hope so. But certain situations may call for more than that. Some of you have been hospitable to people for 2 weeks or so during two-week meetings, or you've been the guest in a home. Well, thank you is appropriate, but you could even consider a few other things that might be appropriate, like helping. Are you easy or hard to be hospitable to? Do people want to have you back? There's a Swahili proverb that says, treat your guests as a guest for 2 days, and on the third day, give them a hoe. There's also an element of church hospitality. When someone first visits our assembly, everything speaks to them. And maybe not top on what's speaking to them, it's what's even said from the pulpit. I think what speaks to them most is the way they are treated in hospitality. They notice every aspect of that encounter. We need to remember that hospitality begins in the parking lot and continues through the week and follow-up communications. First impressions are not always right, but they're crucial. Because we may never get past that. Are they met with a welcome and a smile and a handshake? Everybody here can do that. Are they naturally uncomfortable? Our job is to make them comfortable. I'm not talking about the cushion of the pew. I'm talking about the atmosphere to which they come in. Most times, long before they get into the doctrine that we hold so dear, they are repelled or drawn in by the relationship that we extend or don't. Now, I understand the assembly is often a wonderful time for us to see each other. It's an all wonderful time for parents and grandparents to look at those little kids and go goo goo gaga and all that. But it's got to be a lot more than that. You can do that at home. That's my preference, but that's just my opinion. Invite them out. There's a couple of families in my home congregation that are, I think, just exceptional at this. When a visitor comes, one of those two or three families, you can just bank, they're going to ask them to share a meal with them. It might be in their home. It might be at a restaurant. I really don't care. It's an extension. Are they always accepted? No, but that makes an impact. But hospitality does take work. There's a reasonably small town and you in Vandalia won't consider this a small town. It's Gander, Newfoundland, Canada. In 2001, the population of Gander was about 9,500 people. The reason Gander, Newfoundland, Canada is significant as an illustration. On 9/11, a lot of flights in the air were diverted. They couldn't land in Washington, D.C. or New York. 52 airplanes were diverted to Gander, Newfoundland. If you average 150 people per plane, and I don't know what the average was, but that's about right, Gander, Newfoundland was inundated with the same number of people that the town had. You've got a town of 9,000 that now has 10,000 guests. As the planes landed, the passengers were said, "You're just going to have to stay on the plane for a while. We've got to get organized here." A few hours after that, they begin to let the passengers off of the plane. As they got off the plane, and I read the press report, a convoy of school buses showed up at the side of the plane and took passengers to the terminal. They were all told to relax and wait for a call that would redirect their flights. That call didn't come for 2 days. What I really wanted to tell you was what happened in those 2 days. We found out that Gander and all the surrounding communities converted all high schools, meeting halls, lodges, and churches into a mass lodging area. Some had cots set up, some had mats for sleeping bags and pillows. All the high school students had to volunteer taking care of their new guests. Our passengers were put in a high school. If any woman wanted to be in a woman-only facility, that was arranged. Families were kept together. All elderly passengers were given no choice. They got to stay in private homes. A pregnant lady on our flight was put on a private home right across the street from a 24-hour urgent care facility. Phone calls and emails were available to be made when requested. During the day, passengers were given a choice of excursion trips. Some people went on boat cruises of lakes and harbors. Some went to see local forests. Local bakeries stayed open to make fresh bread for all the guests. Food was prepared by all the residents and brought to the school. Others were driven to restaurants of their choice. They were given local laundromat tokens to wash their clothes since our luggage was still on board. In other words, every single need for those unfortunate travelers was met by the residents of Gander, Newfoundland, Canada. Passengers were crying while telling us these stories. It was absolutely incredible when passengers came on board after their stay at Gander. It was like they were on a cruise. A collection of over $40,000 was taken from just my plane alone to fund scholarships for the high school students. Why all of this? Just because some people in faraway places were kind enough to show strangers who happened to literally drop in on them without any notice. Some of the passengers still go back to visit their friends in Gander, Newfoundland, Canada, to this very day. That's not going to happen in that quantity, probably, to you and I. But hospitality occurs one person at a time, one family at a time. I was sitting over there, obviously listening to Jay, but I was also trying to do my Rolodex of how many of your homes have I had the privilege of staying in. I lost count. Some of you have given me your bedrooms, which made me quite uncomfortable, but I couldn't talk you out of it. And I thank you intensely for that. But hospitality to those who aren't yet part of us. Hospitality to those who don't know what this family life is really all about can have a tremendous impact on them. We need to do it because the Bible tells us to do it, of course. But God knows what he's talking about and the impact it can have. People will forget what you say. People will forget what you do, but they will never forget how you make them feel. And that's hospitality. That's hospitality. The early church welcomed people into their homes. It's with a little bit of envy, I think. I think of them sitting around a table. I'm going to call it a kitchen table. They probably didn't. Studying the Bible and having communion. I've had the privilege of working with two or three congregations from a startup standpoint. And you sit there, just a small group of you, and maybe it's in a circle, and you have your worship service. And it's really nice. But you want to grow. So you grow, and then you have a building, and you have what you've got here. And that's good. We want to grow. And then you sometimes remember when. You remember when. Well, maybe our challenge is not to stay small and in just a little circle. It's to grow, but to grow in a way that keeps hospitality at the very center of our relationships. There are probably people in your home congregation that you've never had in your home, or that you've never been in their home. I'm not saying just go disrupt everything, but boy, what you get out of those home chats. It's not more important than the assembly, but it's far different and deeper than the assembly. And God does call us His family. His family. Paul tells the Romans, be given to hospitality. Peter tells us to be given to hospitality. The writer of Hebrews warns us that maybe you've entertained strangers, angels, unaware. I don't know that I propose that that's the case, but I'm not going to snip that verse out of my Bible. But whether they're angels or not, they're your brothers and sisters, either spiritually or humanly. And that's pretty good. There's a passage that says, if you want to have friend, be a friend. If you want to have hospitality extended to you, maybe you can extend hospitality to somebody else. I'm persuaded that more people have been brought to the Lord around a kitchen table than from a pulpit. I don't have any statistics on that, but my personal experience, when I've had the privilege of studying with someone and maybe it results in them coming to the Lord, God did that, not me. But there's just something about that. There's something about that informality that causes us to be more open and warm and, dare I say, loving one with another. We live in a me world. But that's not the one we find in the Bible. The Bible tells us about a one another world. One another world. First time I ever came to Vandalia, 1962. We pulled up in front of Marvin and Melda's, and out of Chick Powell's station wagon came a bunch of yahoos. Speaking of the other people. We were welcomed into their home. I had no idea, had absolutely no idea, that almost 60 years later, here we would be. because of the hospitality of people like you. Jesus says, come unto me, all you that labor and are heavy laden. He's the master host. He's the master hospitable. If we can help anybody in any way, we invite you to come as we stand and have our closing song.